The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Sherry Weaver. I'm director of the Office of Diversity Services, and it's been my true pleasure to co-coordinate this panel this evening with Shelley Rudge of the Office of Career and Professional Development. They just changed their name, and I'm having a heck of a time getting used to it. The Office of Career and Professional Development. Shelley coordinates clerkships for that office and does a wonderful job of it. I am here to introduce to you our dean, who will bring you words of welcome, and that's always a pleasure, Dean Grossman.
Thank you, Sherry, and good evening, everyone, and welcome to this exciting event on promoting access, diversity among judicial clerks and interns. Tonight, we will hear from a distinguished panel of administrative, state, and federal judges as they discuss the qualities they look for in clerk and intern candidates, as well as the roles that clerk and interns can play in judicial chambers. Following the panel presentations, we will break into a small group discussion led by some of our alumni clerks to explore questions relating to the clerking and intern application process, the work involved, and the issue of increasing diversity among judicial clerks and interns. I'm also proud to say that many of our students and graduates have had an opportunity to serve as judicial clerks or interns, including for the judges present with us today. We know that in the past the training of lawyers was the exclusive domain of law schools, but with the better knowledge about what the profession is and technological developments and the needs of the society at large, we know that we're not the only ones doing training or doing research and producing the results of our research for the widespread scrutiny and analysis. And then as an essential component of the training of future lawyers, these type of events are essential, and what the judges do is really essential, because of course we focus on the most important task, which is to administer justice, but the training of graduates of law schools that who get younger every year has become crucial for the success and the reputation of the profession as a whole. And that adds, of course, to the pressures of the profession of being a judge and the calling of being a judge. But it's important for the judges to know that we will continue to say that perhaps that is second to none in terms of preparing to people for the practice of the profession. So I want to thank them for being here. We're honored for the fact that in spite of the pressures of time, they have chaired this time to be here. Also, your presence here will contribute to our understanding of the importance of increasing diversity among judicial clerks and interns, and will provide invaluable insights on how to successfully apply for such positions. In this law school, we believe that we cannot perform our educational mission if we don't anticipate in the corridors of the law school, in the faces of the students and the faculty and the administrators, the diversity and variety of the nation and the world. It's as part of the educational process, if we don't learn how to interact in a rich and exciting society among ourselves as part of our educational process, we're not going to be successful in our careers and endeavor. That's why the same thing we can say applies to important societal institutions, including the judiciary. We have seen, and my experience comparatively speaking with other countries and in the United Nations, in the administration of justice, having a gendered presence and diversity is crucial for the administration of justice, because as it says, many times, justice not only needs to be fair, but also needs to be perceived in a certain way. And the analysis we have done about justice and its legitimacy requires to address the issues of diversity. I'm Proud to mention that while we can claim some successes in terms of the diversity existing in this institution, diversity is not a factor in rankings of law schools, is not a factor in the overall ranking. However, there is a diversity index nationwide that shows the diversity of the different law schools. And WCL is the third law school in the top tier in the United States in its diversity. And I will say that that happens while other schools are in areas that explain the reason why a certain group is overrepresented in national terms. So in our case, have been the result of commitments to certain values, and we will continue with this commitment. And because we don't think that we can perform our educational mission if we don't do this otherwise. Now, again, as we can claim successes on this thing, we do this with humility, because it's very important to understand that we are yet not achieved a situation where we can claim in the society that we have achieved absolute justice in this respect also. But we will continue to contribute in that line and in that direction with the help of everyone. I would also like to mention briefly that this event is part of our annual Founders Celebration. And Founders Celebration is based on a strategic vision of the law school, and that strategic vision is the following. Because in every societal component there is a legal issue, we enhance the quality of the societal debate by creating a space for the exchange of views in our school. And we have over 60 conferences here attracting over 5,000 people. And then we multiply the outreach of what we do through podcasting and webcasting. We have 170,000 hits in our podcast operation and over 40,000 in our webcast operation. And listen to this, and I'm not going to blame in my Spanish the mistake, because it's not a mistake, 40 million Google hits. And then the outreach of the law school in our programs have been crucial to serve a societal need, because in the country and in the world, people want to know what is going on and what is the relevance of the law, and be empowered by the knowledge of what is going on. And then events like this have an important multiplying impact. Also, they contribute to the good values. It's good to have people debating about these things. These are values in themselves. But if we have people talking about the relevance of the law from whatever perspective they want to, I would submit to all of you that is much better than to have them engage in other forms of societal behavior. Let me turn to today's event. I'm proud to welcome all of the judges and alumni clerks, and to mention that both Judge Hong and Judge Lee are graduates of our law school, and we're so proud that you're graduates of our law school. And Judge Urbina is a member of the Dean's Diversity Council. I'm honored also once to have been unfairly, I would say, undeservedly awarded the recognition that carries his name. Judge Butler is on the ad hoc planning committee for an upcoming conference, Administrative Adjudication, a Capital Idea, Fact, Fiction, Proof in the 21st Century, for which our school is a co-sponsor. And Judge Blackburn Ripsley has been a longtime supporter of our clerks and interns. So we appreciate what you represent, who you are, and your commitment with legal education in general, and also with our institution. I'm also proud to mention that you have here the best that we can offer. When I mention that we have 60 founders events in this law school, 22 of those are organized by our students. And they have an entrepreneurial spirit, a seriousness of purpose, and a commitment that will make them ideal candidates for any position, including the position of clerking. And so I will tell you that the exposure of our school, our teachers, our faculty to the students shows every day that the educational model of consumers and providers doesn't explain the complexities of legal education. Education is a two-way street, and we learn from our students a lot, and they are a source for inspiration. Also, 60% of the men and women studying in our law school say that they came to study to our law school because they believe that the knowledge of the law is essential to contribute to a better world. We don't do a poll when they finish law school, I have to confess. And I wonder how we affect the idealism that they bring to the institution. But I will tell you that they are a tremendous source of pride also for what we do here. And as I repeat, they are the best that we can offer. I also want to thank the Office of Career and Professional Development and the Office of Diversity Services for organizing this important event. We're grateful for the work and dedication and what they do for our students. Their enthusiasm is contagious. I also want to thank Shelly Raj, who is here, for her commitment. She has increased our presence, Shelly, in the clerkship endeavor of this institution. Now, around 18% of our graduates are getting clerkships. Well, without further delay, please join me in welcoming all of you here. And let me first of all ask Judge Lee and Alam, whose contributions to the judiciary and our institution cannot be overstated. Judge Lee.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to thank Dean Grossman for inviting us to join you today to talk about diversity among judicial clerks and interns, and to empower each of you who are here to learn about the opportunity that there is to serve in the judiciary as an intern or as a judge's law clerk. The focus is on diversity and judicial clerkships and internships, because our goal is to increase the numbers of students from all backgrounds, and particularly minority students, to compete for clerkships. Now, why is that? Because the opportunity is a gateway to excel in your legal profession. And as students here at WCL, I'm sure you've taken advantage of our many clinics. And whenever I'm out on the road, whether I'm at a law school or if I'm talking to lawyers, one of the things I'm really proud of about our law school is the opportunity you have to serve in clinics and in internships and externships. Can you imagine going to medical school for 4 years and never going to the ER? Can you imagine going to medical school for 4 years and never going to the operating room? Well, how is it then that a law student can spend 3 years here at American University and not go to the Supreme Court, never come see judge or being a preside over a trial, never go to the D.C. Court of Appeals and see Judge Anna Blacksburn Rigsby hear oral argument in an important case before the D.C. Supreme Court? How is it that a lawyer, law student, a future lawyer at American University Law School can avoid going over to Baltimore to see Judge Hong preside in district court, one of the busiest courts in our nation? How is that? Well, today, what I hope to do is to encourage you, all of you, to ask whatever questions you have about clerkships and internships and to benefit from our view of how this process works. One of the things I'd like to do, because I fear that I'll make a mistake if I don't do this now, will the students in here who are former interns of mine please stand? Evan, Frank, Daniel, current interns as well. Okay. David Greengrass and future interns, Vanessa Rodriguez. Okay. Now that you've seen this group, you need to ask them about internships, because they're all involved with it. Our panel, and let me introduce our panel very briefly, and then we'll get right to our topic. And I'll start with my immediate right. Judge Anna Blackburn Rigsby is on the D.C. Court of Appeals, and prior to serving on the D.C. Court of Appeals, she was a judge of the Superior Court of District of Columbia, a trial judge. Seated next to her is Judge Ricardo Urbina, a former law professor who also taught at Howard University Law School, a former member of the Superior Court of the District of Columbia Trial Court, and now a United States District Judge for the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C. Seated next to him is Judge Jeannie Hong, who is a judge of the Baltimore City District Court, which is a court of limited jurisdiction in Maryland that hears a wide variety of civil and criminal cases. And prior to ascending the bench, Judge Hong distinguished herself as an attorney in Maryland. And to the far right is Judge Tyrone Butler, who is the Chief Administrative Law Judge of the Office of Administrative Hearings of the District of Columbia. And Judge Butler presides over an agency that is responsible for hearing examiner judges for 19 different agencies. What I thought we would do is start with the most obvious question first, and that is to have each judge tell us a little bit about their court and how the court goes about the process of identifying outstanding students to serve as intern and a judicial law clerk. I told them 5 to 7 minutes, but obviously I'm not going to cut them off. But I do want them to, each person, have a chance to tell you about what they do and how they go about identifying interns and law clerks. Judge Butler, can we start on your end?
We certainly can.
Thank you.
The Office of Administrative Hearings for the District of Columbia is a brand new operation. It went official in March of 2004. We have, at this point in time, 33 administrative law judges and 16 legal assistants, 4 attorneys, and 1 general counsel. We hire 4 interns during the summer. We participate in an internship program sponsored by the Washington Judicial Council Superior Court, which provides us with 3 unpaid clerks during the summer. In addition, we participate in the UDC Fellow Public Interest Fellowship Program, which provides interns a stipend to work for a government or nonprofit agency. This summer, we'll be hosting 1 clerk from this program. We recruited all the area law schools. We participate in online and on-site recruiting. In other words, we will go out and visit job fairs, law job fairs, and try to recruit interns. We have a relationship with 2 law schools outside the district, the University of Delaware and the Thomas Cooley School of Law in Michigan. We hire both first and second year students. Interns work with our judges for over a period of 10 to 12 weeks. These are during the semester interns. We have jurisdiction for a wide variety of cases. We cover 19 agencies in the district. Among those agencies, healthcare, tax, unemployment insurance, public works, taxi cabs, rental housing. We try to place the interns in the area of their interest. However, but to enhance the experience, we ask the interns to move around. We will switch them after a few weeks in one area, move them to another area. The students spend the summer accompanying judges to hearings, completing research and writing assignments, and drafting routine decisions. Students also assist in the Office of the General Counsel with legislative matters. During the semester, we have a fellowship from the Administrative Law Section of the D.C. Bar. This allows us to hire up to 2 paid interns per semester. This fellowship may not be available every year, but it is this year. We hire unpaid interns to clerk during the fall and spring semesters. These students are primarily second and third year students. We participate in externship programs. These programs place students with OAH during the semester for credit hours. This year we have students from Thomas Cooley School of Law, Howard University, and George Washington University. We've been fortunate to receive up to 6 first-year students every fall semester from the University of the District of Columbia. UDC requires every first-year student to perform 40 hours of service to a government nonprofit agency. What we look for is a well-rounded individual with strong research and writing skills. In order to apply, you only need to present a resume, a transcript, and a writing sample. What is also helpful is that we are a public agency and in the executive. If you contact the judge who's responsible for this program, you can very well visit and sit in on hearings and watch the judges work and get an idea of what goes on in the Office of Administrative Hearings. If you're taking notes, The judge who's responsible is Judge Janet Mahan, and her phone number is area code 202-442-9094. If anyone's interested in applying with a resume transcript writing sample, you can see me after the session. I'll give you my mailing address. Thank you.
Judge Hong?
Okay. Good evening. My name is Jeannie Hong. I'm a graduate from American from 1992, and within 10 years, I ascended to the bench. So I'll be nice to every single one of you, because one of you may be my boss someday. But the court I sit on is the district court in Baltimore. We have criminal cases, misdemeanor cases, where they cover assaults, thefts, car thefts, handguns, lots of drug cases, preliminary hearings, bail reviews, incarcerable traffic like DWI and speeding and parking, and civil cases such as rent court, contracts up to $25,000, car accidents, and many, many civil protective and peace orders and protective orders. It's never a dull moment. You will see the sea of humanity. Your dockets are 50 cases to 100 cases. You see people that come in with suit and tie, and then other people with baggy pants down to their, you know, down to their hips, and tank tops, and sometimes halter tops, and you have to say, excuse me, I don't think that's, you know, appropriate. Can you cover yourself a little bit? You know, you'll hear language like that you don't learn in law school in these textbooks, like, you know, language that's so improper, but if you hear it long enough, you don't think it's so improper, like, he left out, or there was a bulge in his dip area. Who knows what a dip area is? You know, before coming out of law school, you don't learn that, but being in court, a dip area, for those that don't know, is where a lot of people hide a gun down in their dip area here. So it's, you can't make this up. It's more interesting than CSI or any of the shows on TV. So after work, I can't watch any of that because I've already seen enough of it at court. But seriously, it is the best job in the whole world. In Baltimore City, there are 27 judges. We have to, unfortunately, share our law clerks. We aim for diversity. We currently have 3 law clerks. 2 are African American, 1 is an East Asian female, 1's from GW Law School, 1 is from Thomas Cooley Law School in Detroit, Michigan, 1 is from Tulane in New Orleans. Every circuit court judge, we have 112 district court judges in the state of Maryland. We have 150 circuit court judges in the state of Maryland. And every circuit court judge gets a law clerk. So on the Court of Special Appeals, there are 13 judges. And on the Court of Appeals, we have 1 law clerk, Eric Huang, in the back, who is our chief judge's law clerk. And he has the esteemed honor to be the only law clerk for Judge Bell for 2 years. So if you are interested in applying to be a judge's law clerk in the state of Maryland, I would encourage you to look on the internet on courts, courts.state.md.us. And for district court, the deadline is May 1st. So for district court in Baltimore City, Keith Matthews is our administrative judge. You send your applications to him. Be prepared to, after you take the bar, you start your job in August to September. For circuit court, it's a different timeline. The earliest is October. Call the judges' chambers that you're thinking about and find out. The latest is January. And again, then you be prepared to start your job in August. To be a law clerk, it's, if you have a good idea of the jurisdiction that you want to practice in, you should apply to be a law clerk in that particular jurisdiction, because you're going to get to know the parties, see the lawyers, find out who you would like to emulate, who you would like to model yourself after, and just develop relationships. So I strongly encourage you to apply to Maryland. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Urbino. Well, when I was finishing up my term of 13 years as a judge on the Superior Court in Washington, D.C., I had a law clerk and two interns. Both those interns were American University students. And during that kind of torturous period when the process is sometimes churning and sometimes crawling to advance the person who's being considered, these interns played a very important role in trying to keep things in order while I moved presumably in the direction of the federal judgeship I now hold. The reason I mention that is this. Both those interns became law clerks to me. I have three law clerks. The reason I have three as opposed to the usual two is because soon after becoming a federal judge, the secretary I then had came and told me two things. She said, well, first of all, you don't need a secretary anymore. And second of all, I'm going on to graduate school. So that cinched that. She explained, which became a very apparent reality, is that law students now come to clerkships knowing everything there is to know about technology, everything there is to know about word processing, and there is nothing that you hand to a secretary that she types up for you anymore, and that it would be wiser for me to take on a third law clerk, someone who would have longer tenure with me, and that's what I did. I know we'll get into some specifics a little later on about the types of things judges look for, but if you want to know everything there is to know about what a judge looks for in an intern, you can ask Quinn Zhao, sitting in the front row here, because she was one of my interns. And what I'm about to tell you is probably not characteristic of what other judges may tell you, but I do believe that interns provide a very fertile opportunity for a judge to review prospects for clerkships. Now, not all judges feel that way, and we can talk about more about that later. In any event, all of you, or probably all of you, have taken federal jurisdiction, so I don't have to tell you what kind of cases I hear. The difference, perhaps, with my federal court, the court on which I sit, as opposed to perhaps the court in Utah or somewhere else, is that because of the proximity of the federal government, my court gets a superabundance of cases involving the federal government either as a plaintiff or as a defendant, and sometimes it's members of the federal government who are defendants in criminal cases, as you may have read from time to time. And so it's a very interesting mix of cases. The law clerks, my law clerks, work on everything. Not all judges permit their law clerks to work on all cases. My thinking is that what I look for and what I like to experience in my law clerks, of course, is mature judgment. And no matter how bright an individual is graduating from law school, there are other things that add to that individual's profile in contributing to that person's ability to function as a mature, providing a mature amount of input in the process of interplay with a law clerk. I've had a very good experience in that regard with American University graduates. But the other thing that I think all judges will probably confirm, at least those of us who have the privilege of working with law clerks one-on-one, is that we develop a relationship that is long-lasting, it is firm, and it is unique. My law clerks, as I said, work on all types of cases, and quite frequently it becomes important for me to sit down with a law clerk and to vent about things that are happening, about activity in the courtroom, about lawyers I'd like to strangle, anything like that. And just be able to have that free exchange with a person. I can't do it when I go home, and there's no one else outside chambers I can do it with, so a law clerk becomes critical in the course of that rapport and that relationship. So I guess the bottom line, before we get into specifics, that I provided through your questions through the moderator, Judge Lee, is this. There are wide opportunities in the judiciary for persons who are really interested. There's a myth out there that you have to be law review in order to become a judge's law clerk, whether it be a federal judge or otherwise, and that's not true. I don't believe it's true in my experience personally, and otherwise, is that it's not true. One thing that I'll end with is this. You know, the judiciary, when the framers of the Constitution put it all together, they created a very specific regimen for the judiciary. The judiciary was there and created in the way it was to protect the rights of the minority. The executive branch, the leader is voted in, usually, by the majority. The legislative branch, the leaders and its various members are voted in by the majority. And having a government where there is only the majority that governs is very dangerous. That's why they gave federal judges life tenure and disassociated them from the political system so that she or he could operate in a fashion to protect those rights which the Constitution intended be protected.
Judge Anna Blackburn Rigsby now serves on the D.C. Court of Appeals, and as I said earlier, like Judge Urbina, she also serves as a trial judge. So I'm also very curious to hear about her experience now that she has a chance to review the record for error.
Thank you, and it's always a pleasure and an honor to serve on a panel with my distinguished colleagues, Judge Urbina, Judge Lee, Judge Hong, and I have been on previous panels, and also our Chief Administrative Law Judge. I've had the opportunity to serve on panels and participate in other symposiums with, and so it's always nice to see our colleagues. I'm not sure where to start, so I'm just going to jump right in and start by recognizing my law clerk, one of my current law clerks, Ebony Robinson, who is a graduate of American University Law School. Ebony, you can stand up.
Stand up.
And one of my previous interns, Maricela, is here also. So I have had, thank you. I've had a fantastic experience and history with hiring very dynamic clerks from American University School of Law and fantastic interns. And I believe very strongly in having interns in my chambers. And judges have differing views on this, but my view is ever since coming to the bench, I started as a magistrate judge at the Superior Court and then a trial judge there. I've had interns in some capacity. And my thought is that the interns not only provide a valuable service to me and to the court, but they also have an opportunity to learn from the law clerks. And the law clerks also have an opportunity to train and help train the interns. So it sort of goes to one of my core beliefs that our profession is one of service and of giving back. And if we don't ensure and train up newer, brighter, smarter lawyers to come and replace us one day, then the purpose for which the judiciary was established in our country, that Judge Urbina so eloquently described, can't have an opportunity to be fulfilled and to carry out its very important purpose. So, to that end, I guess shortly after coming onto the bench at Superior Court, I figured out that it was important to develop a little manual in chambers. And it changes and it's updated from time to time, depending on what assignment I was rotating through at the court, to help orientate the interns coming into chambers and to help ensure some continuity and to help at least answer some of the initial questions that we typically get from interns. So if you come to my chambers as an intern, you get a short orientation. You're interviewed in much the same way I interview my law clerks. And you're screened, and I check your references, and you have to go through a security clearance to work at Superior Court, even as an intern. And the same thing is true at Court of Appeals. And that is because there is a very close and personal relationship and dynamic in chambers. My interns and my law clerks will tell you we work very hard, we laugh a lot, we talk a lot, and we discuss a lot about the cases, about the lawyers, about my perceptions, about your perceptions, and it's important to be able to do that, for me to be able to do that with a certain comfort level that what we talk about stays in chambers, because our discussions internally, taken out of context or heard out of context, take on a whole new light that becomes very unfortunate. And I will share an example of an intern that we had in chambers for a very brief time, and you'll see why. We had a case come before us, and the intern happened to know one of the parties. How did I find this out? Well, the party, after having a conversation with the intern, took it upon themselves to email me directly. Now, how would the party get the judge's direct email address? Well, they wouldn't unless the intern gave it to them. And so the intern thought they were being very helpful I don't know what they thought, but completely inappropriate. And this is why judgment and maturity and loyalty and a sense of decorum are so critical in your relationship with the judge. So having said that, I want to backstep just a little bit to talk about Court of Appeals. I'm 6 months into my new appointment on the D.C. Court of Appeals, which is the highest court of the District of Columbia, not the highest court in the District of Columbia. You all know what that is. But it's very different moving from a trial court to an appellate court. And the role of the law clerk is very different. And this is a question that you might want to ask yourself as you're trying to decide what internships or clerkships to apply for. As a trial judge, we had a busy docket. I was on civil calendar prior to my appointment, heavy motions practice, but you also had an opportunity to see trials. Lots of very fact-intensive, dense motions filed by some of the largest firms in the city, but also some pro se motions, sometimes fact-intensive and sometimes difficult to comprehend. So you had a wide range of the cases that we worked on, and it was the role of the law clerks to research and to draft, at least in the first instance, some of those orders in response to the motions. On the appellate side, the role of the law clerk is very different. We get the record of the trial below. And I have to say that I really appreciate the perspective of a trial judge now being on the appellate court in some of our deliberations, because appellate judges sit in panels of three. We call them divisions of three. And we hear the case, and then we have to decide the case together. And coming from being a trial judge where you sort of are a solo operator, you decide in a bench trial, or you write your order and you decide that you like it that way, and so you issue it. Well, at the appellate level, it doesn't work quite that way, because you have to get your other colleagues to agree with you and to sign off on it. And so the first couple of times I did that, it was a little disconcerting. And my colleagues on the trial bench will understand that getting something back with comments, I was like, what do you mean change the way I wrote it? I kind of liked the way I wrote it the first time. And so there's a process sort of collegial, collective decision-making, which I enjoy now, because I think you end up with a better product after you get input from your colleagues into the decision. And so we get the record from below, which is volumes, sometimes boxes of documents, of the trial transcript, all the pleadings. And so as a law clerk, one of the important duties of the law clerk is to read through that record and help to distill it down so that we can talk about it, because it would be very difficult for me to read every single piece of paper that comes through the chambers. As an appellate judge, we have two law clerks. And so you have to make sure that you're going to enjoy digging down deep into those transcripts and reading through the cases, and then helping to write bench memos and draft, in the first instance, what will ultimately be an opinion issued by the court. We talk about it a lot, so I like to think that my law clerks are never flying blind, and in fact, I like the discourse and the discussion. That's what makes it come to life a little bit, so it's not just paper. So it's very close, it's very collegial. I remember one of my law clerks asking me on her first day, Judge, would it be possible for me to schedule monthly meetings with you? And I thought, yes, you could do that if you want to, but why would you want to do that? And she said, well, so we could discuss the cases. I said, well, you could do that, or you could just walk in my office and we could sit down and talk anytime. And so what I like to say is I have an open door policy, even if my door is closed, my law clerks know they can always knock on it, come in, and we can address an issue immediately. We don't have to set up a formal meeting, and that's what the interaction is like in chambers. So, thank you.
Thank you. Well, let me try to just briefly tell you a little bit about my court and my experience with interns and law clerks. First, let me say that I think that first-year students who are looking for summer jobs ought to consider a judicial internship with a state or trial judge so that you can give your legal education some tangibility. In my chambers, I get about 60 to 100 applications for four internship positions every semester. I'm very selective about who I will take, and what I'm looking for in the applications is someone who has achieved some measure of success in law school. Good grades are important, but I don't expect you to be on law review as a first-year student if I'm looking at you as for a summer internship position. I'd like to see you have demonstrated some interest in writing, and I'd like to see something about public service in your resume. That's just something that's important to me. And ultimately, I'm going to look very carefully at your cover letter and your resume and your writing sample. And what we're looking for is attention to detail and an ability to compose a succinct sentence that's grammatically correct and properly punctuated. And so what happens is once we go through, and my law clerks and I go through the applications, we pull out a number, and then they go through the red pen test where the law clerk takes the final group and goes over it from the standpoint of the things we just talked about and makes a judgment about who they recommend that I bring in. And we bring in students, then we conduct interviews, and we select from those intern applications the students that we want. Like Judge Blackburn raised me, and I'm sure Judge Urbina, for me, the responsibility of being a judge and mentoring first-year or second-year students is a very important one. I enjoy teaching, and I enjoy providing the students with a construct to analyze legal problems and a way of approaching a legal problem. And I always tell my interns, this is just how I approach the problem. There are many ways to tackle this problem. I use IRAC for everything. Everyone here knows what IRAC is. Yeah. And my interns will all tell you, the first thing I'm going to ask you when you walk in my office is, what is the issue? I don't want to hear all the facts. What's the issue? And then I expect you to give me your response to that. In terms of my law clerks are my lawyers. That's how I introduce them. And I view them as my legal advisors. I realize that as a newly minted lawyer, right out of law school or 1 or 2 years out of law school, that you have some idea about the academics of law, but I know you don't have the practical experience. That's why I'm there. I have 30 years of experience, and so I'm ultimately going to make the call. But I want my law clerks and interns to make a recommendation to me on how I should rule on a particular motion. I'll give you the briefs. You go out, read the cases, and come back to me with the bench memo, or come back to me with your draft of what you think I ought to do, and we're going to talk about it. We may talk about it as we go along. We may not talk about it until I see your final product. But I always tell my interns and law clerks, never worry. It's always going to be my call, and I'm going to read the briefs myself, because I know you are a newly minted lawyer or a law student. Don't worry. I'm not giving you a multi-million-dollar case to decide without reading the briefs myself. I'm going to read the briefs myself. And like Judge Urbina, I think the district court is where you're going to see a wide variety of issues. What I love about the job is occasionally I have to decide whether or not a new statute is constitutional, whether or not the president has exceeded his authority in some particular governmental action. And I have had a number of cases that are high profile involving terrorism, capital cases, and other interesting issues involving technology and emerging technology involving the internet, which are all things that turn me on to get my juices flowing. And so in chambers, we really tackle those issues. I encourage everyone to consider applying for internships and law clerk positions. And I think where I want to end is to say that it's really a very special opportunity to work for a judge as an intern or a law clerk. It's a very close and confidential relationship. You're going to see the inside process, thought processes of a judge. You're also going to sit in a courtroom and see lawyers present cases, and you'll have rapidly develop an idea about what kinds of things work very well and what kinds of things do not work. and you also identify role models of styles of practice that you will want to adopt and others that you want to avoid. So it's a really a unique opportunity. One of the joys and the benefits for me of being a judge, particularly with interns and law clerks, is I've had so many outstanding interns. And if I have 12 in a year and I only have two positions for law clerk, I can't hire the other 11. I can't hire them. So in the last 5 years, I've had about 25 become federal and state law clerks for other judges. And I love it when my interns secure clerkships. And I'm a very avid supporter of all my interns who seek clerkships. And I say for the last 5 years, at least one of the law clerks I've hired has been a former intern. An internship is like one long job interview. You're with the judge every day. And so the judge gets to know you and your work ethic and your abilities. And you also receive what I will call an advanced legal writing course from my outstanding law clerks who are outstanding in every measure with respect to legal research and writing, and who are also great teachers. My current law clerk, Jared Smith, who is here today, Jared, raise your hand. Jared was the executive editor of the American University Law Review, and he taught legal writing here in the legal writing program. And he was an intern a couple of years ago in my chambers, and then he clerked for the chief judge of the D.C. Court of Appeals. Now, not all of my law clerks were Law Review editors, but some of them have been. And so what I'd like to do is to end by saying that the lifelong relationship you form with a judge as a law clerk is one that produces many benefits. It opens the doors to judicial appointments, to United States Attorney's Office, to presidential appointments. You're going to meet people with your judge, and your judge will know you and your family. I perform weddings and we have reunions and new babies come by chambers. It's a very, very special relationship. It's unlike any other job you'll ever have, and I think all of us will say that a clerkship is perhaps one of the best jobs you'll ever have. Let me open it up now, and one of the things that I thought it might be helpful is if each of us, each of the judges, would tell us just how you go about the process of picking from the so many outstanding candidates you have, the clerks, if there are things that you think stand out that are very important for a student who wants to compete for a clerkship.
Can I kick that on?
Please.
All right. I'm going to start because it probably, my process is a good contrast to how some other judges might handle matters. First of all, I have three intern programs a year, one in the fall, one in the spring, and then one during the summer. The summer intern program is a full-time program. The student commits 40 hours, at least 40 hours a week. During the spring and the fall, my expectations are at least 20 hours a week, and each intern is placed under the supervision and tutelage of one of my law clerks. My law clerks are hired. One of the significant factors for me when I hire a law clerk is their interest in teaching and their abilities to teach. Me in particular, but also interns over whom they will have supervision. And in that regard, I frequently look for a resume in a law clerk, for example, that suggests that this is a person who enjoys the kind of interaction and the kind of teaching role that is endemic to that position. So let me just say that for law clerks, I think I've already referenced the fact that mature judgment is a factor. Very good writing skills is required, and their ability to research very well. And frequently, those are qualities that you find in the majority of well-educated law students. The most important factor, however, is their ability to get along with me. Because having all the brains in the world and being a wonderful mentor to interns becomes secondary if the law clerk and I do not see eye to eye on how things are to run. My law clerks get in at 7 a.m. in the morning. They work 12 to 13-hour days. I get up at 4:30. If I pick up the phone and I want to speak to my law clerk at 7:30, I expect to have that law clerk on the other end of the line. I get ideas during the night. Oh, well, I think what about this? And I'll pick up the phone. And you know what I was thinking? And I want that feedback. And I want some groggy person at the other end of the phone, unable to articulate a phrase or even understand one. So, and I think every judge has his or her own idiosyncrasies, and that's one of them. I'm a morning person. And so when someone interviews with me, I ask them, are you a morning person? If they say no, I say, can you become one? And hopefully the answer is yes. I do not usually hire right out of law school. The exception is I have made offers to interns, for example, who are in their third year, but they cannot come on with me until they've worked a year. Most of the people I hire is right out of the private sector at law firms or in other situations where they've had experience. Doesn't have to be litigation experience. So, that again, that's something that's peculiar to me. As for the intern programs, they're very structured. There is, as I think I heard Judge Blackburn Rigsby say, a manual. And this manual has been the compilation of things put together, and it is constantly in flux because it's constantly being updated and changed and revised. But this manual becomes the teaching instrument because it covers all the bases for the law clerk who teaches the intern. That intern gets a packet of material when she or he comes on, and that material must be assimilated, including my writing style, how I expect things to be written, and so forth, the formatting, as well as other substantive and ethical issues that an intern has to be familiar with. I was glad to hear Judge Blackburn Rigsby talk about the situation she encountered, because it reinforced what we all believe is the important element of mature judgment, good intentions notwithstanding. And so the law clerks go through, the interns go through a training program, and then they come in and right under the tutelage of the law clerk, and the law clerk delegates cases. Sometimes it'll be, as in Judge Blackburn Rigsby's explanation, a stack of information. Sometimes we get appeals from the administrative agencies, or sometimes it's something that's coming at us that has had a history of some kind. And I have absolutely no intention of sitting down with 700 pages of material and sorting it out. That's the heavy lifting is done by the law clerk, and the law clerk's heavy lifting is done by the intern. That's how it works.
It flows down.
Absolutely. And in the final tally, there is a lot of redlining. I had to laugh at Judge Blackburn Rigsby's reaction to having her stuff redlined, because there it is in life. We all get our stuff kind of rewritten. My wife rewrites my stuff all the time. And I get overruled by her, too. But the point is that it's really important for the intern to understand that there are human beings involved in every case. Sometimes that fact becomes lost because you're dealing with papers and legal issues and utterances and affidavits and so forth. But the fact of the matter is, every decision any one of us here makes affects someone or more than one person's life. So that's a reality that is constantly impressed on the intern, because it is constantly impressed on the law clerk by me. And ultimately, when the thing is written and the intern hands it in for the final time and it's revised, and then the law clerk reads it and revises it, then in my chambers, that written product, perhaps it is a proposed order, which I've already discussed with the law clerk in all likelihood, that proposed order is circulated to the other law clerks. So nothing gets to my desk until the interns have worked on it, the law clerk assigned to the case has worked on it, and the other two law clerks have read it. And then I sit down and I read it, and hopefully what that means is I get to examine it for content. I get to examine it for substance, and I don't have to be concerned about rephrasing things or catching errors in grammar and so forth and so forth. So that's a nutshell of how my chambers work.
Okay. In terms of the law clerk positions, that is paid in our courthouse, but internships are non-paid. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
They're not paid in
our
courthouse.
All right. In terms of what you would expect if you became a law clerk on the District Court of Maryland, of course, you should have good research and writing skills. Knowing a good knowledge of Maryland law is a plus. It's not necessary that you be on Law Review or Journal, but it does help. Again, as Judge Urbina said, what's important is you need to gel with the judge and the chambers and have a good personality. You would be expected to help prepare dockets, make sure dockets are in order, attend meetings with the judges. In Baltimore City, we've become specialized in a lot of dockets. We have a drug treatment court. We have a special domestic violence court. We have a special early resolution court. We have even teen court. So you would be expected to help the judge. In my courthouse, which I'm in charge of one of the four district courthouses in Baltimore, we are the integrated domestic violence court. So I expect my law clerk to help me on many issues with domestic violence. Some days you may just come into court and observe the trials, as some of the other judges have been previously trial court judges, and then, yes, go back in chambers, discuss. We do discuss lawyers, prosecutors, public defenders, what worked, what didn't, what issues they didn't argue, what issues they argued well. One of the main, I think, goals and benefits of becoming a law clerk is developing that rapport and close relationship with the judge. My current, because the judge can be your advocate, your supporter, the person that gives you advice. My current law clerk, he's very interested in doing public service. He's had 3 interviews. He has 3 offers. He's going to have another interview tomorrow. It's just up to him now to decide which job he wants to take. And that's because not just me, but other judges take an interest, and if somebody has a contact and they know that you're interested in civil rights or immigration, most often that judge has a connection and can connect you with a law firm or an agency or somebody in that agency. So when it's time for you to put in that resume, they can make a call or give you a great recommendation letter. In terms of the internships, those are very flexible with me in terms of if you are willing to drive to Baltimore City from American University Law School, I am willing to hire an intern at my courthouse. However, we'll just have to work it out with your schedules. Understanding you're not paid, we could make it flexible. The only caveat is that you are expected to go through a security check, and we'll have to run a criminal background check just as we do for everybody. And believe it or not, one intern, that check did come up with something in the past, and I wasn't able to hire her. So it is flexible. If you are interested in an internship, please send me a resume or a letter of interest along with a resume, okay, at Jeannie Hong, and you can find me. I'll give you my address. 1400.
They should be able to find that on the internet.
These
are law students. They should be able to find you.
Thank you.
That's right.
I hire the interns in a similar way as the, and I say hire, even though they are non-paid internships, in the same way as the law clerks, as I described earlier, with the one caveat is the timing. Now at the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, we follow the federal guidelines for full-time law clerks, which indicate that we don't start accepting for the next year until after Labor Day. And I'm not sure what the exact drop date is this time. And so the earlier you get it in, the better, but now you can't get it in too early. And so those guidelines are somewhere, and I'm sure you all can find out what the deadline is. So we start accepting right after Labor Day to hire our clerks for the following fall. And you know, there's a lot of competition between the judges to get good law clerks. I prefer a law clerk that's had some prior experience. That's why internships are important, because I value internships, particularly with colleagues that I know, who I could call and say, what did you think about this person's work? And like Judge Lee mentioned, Several of my interns have gone on to clerkships with other judges, both federal judges and state court judges. So for law clerks, starting after Labor Day, that's when we start picking up the applications and looking through them. For interns, I have them in the spring, fall, and summer. I don't require a set number of hours, but I do require that if you tell me you could do 15 hours, that it be the same 15 hours, because we do try to schedule it so that we don't have 10 interns tripping over everyone in chambers. We want everyone to be comfortable in their space. I wanted to mention that the American Bar Association has a judicial internship program, which I took advantage of this year, where they it's geared toward minority law students, and they pay a stipend. I think the deadline has passed for this year, but for those of you who are thinking about it, check out the American Bar Association's website. One of the interns who will be starting in my chambers for the summer is an American University law student who's going to be getting a stipend through the ABA program. And then the Washington Bar Association, of the National Bar Association, which is the predominantly African American Lawyers Bar Association, has a paid internship program as well. One thing I wanted to mention is when you come for the interview, Chambers is small. I have a judicial administrative assistant, and a part of our process is the candidate, whether it's a law clerk or an intern, sits and talks with the judicial administrative assistant. Some people have made the mistake of thinking that, oh, she's just the secretary, so let me just sort of tap my foot while I wait for the real interview. Big mistake. Big mistake, because by the time my administrative assistant escorts you into my office, all I have to do is look at her face, and I know, nope. Because if you can't get along with her, chances are you won't get along very well with me. After you spend a few minutes talking with my administrative assistant, then you talk with the law clerks. You meet with the law clerks because they will be supervising your work on a daily basis in consultation with me. And then after that, then you will come in and talk with me for a while. What I'm looking for after we've screened the resume for grades and strong writing are a match, a click. Will this be someone who will be fun to have and fun to work with during the many hours we spend in chambers? So I think I'm going to stop there. Thank you.
Okay. We don't have law clerks. What we do have is we have staff attorneys. And these are young people that have just graduated or have been out of law school for maybe a year. And their work is very much involved with the legislature, and I like to think of them as lawyers for the office. And it's a great opportunity to visit the council, see the council hearings, to come back and give us your interpretation of what you see, what you've seen, what's going on. Keep an eye on the what's going on in the legislative world to see how much of it affects the office, and if it does affect the office, what you can do or how we should react to that. These are our staff attorneys. It's we have had a great deal of luck with these young people. They've come in, and they move on from us after 2 or 3 years. It is a career position. It's not unlikely we would get a staff attorney who would stay for 10 or 15 years, but usually folks move on from there with a very good knowledge and a basis in probably one of the most sophisticated political systems in the country. Our interns are working, as I mentioned earlier, we do have paid interns as well as unpaid interns. Our interns work mainly with the judges directly. They do not work for the staff attorneys. The staff attorneys are busy enough as it is. We count on them a lot. They're our backbone, because while the judges are doing cases and legal assistants are doing data processing, our clerks are keeping an eye on what's going on out there to make sure that a young agency does not get shot in the back or stabbed in the back or whatever you want to call it. But we are a young agency, and we count very much on our staff attorney. So if you have an interest, we look for people that have an interest in public service and in politics. And that's exactly what we get. Some very good people have come through.
I'd like to just share briefly what I look for when I'm looking through resumes. as you might expect, we're looking at the quality of the letter, the cover letter, and there are some form letters out there that we see a lot, and so that group gets pushed aside. There's a group that has misspelled my name. That group is pushed aside. And I try to see if there's some connection made with me in the letter. I know that's really a great opportunity to clerk, and I think that what judges are looking for is, why do you want to clerk for me? And I look at your resume, and what I'm looking for is that you have had some academic success, as I said earlier. It is helpful to have had some experience where you've had some writing experience, whether it was in a large law firm or setting or the D.C. Public Defender Service, the United States Attorney's Office in the Appellate Division as an intern or law clerk. I also am concerned about what happens in your second summer, third-year students. That is to say, if you decided to work at a large law firm, did you get the offer? If you did not get the offer, then you have some explaining to do, Lucy. You on, or Lucy, Ernest? Lucy, you've got some explaining to do? You've got some explaining to do? We want to know why you didn't get the offer. I'm also looking for other things that are interesting about you. What did you do at undergraduate school that suggests that you were interested in public service of some kind? Were you involved in a mentorship program? Did you work in your community on some project? Have you traveled internationally? Are you fluent in more than one language? Do you speak Spanish or Vietnamese? What other things do you do outside of your law school life that might be interesting? And when I think about the resumes that I've seen, certainly if someone is on the Law Review or a journal, that stands out. And judicial internships stand out for the same reasons Judge Blackburn Rigsby just said. That is, if I see that you've done an internship at the United States Attorney's Office or with Judge Urbina or Judge Blackburn Rigsby, someone I know, and I have a sense that they allow their interns to write, then I have an idea that you've been exposed to the writing process and you have some idea about how to turn out a publishable quality opinion. Everything I do has to be publishable quality. And even if I don't want to publish something, it's published because the E-Government Act requires everything that I do, including a motion, granting a motion to continue, is placed online. And someone said once that doctors can bury their mistakes, but judges' mistakes end up online and in the West publications, in F sub second, and then in the D.C. and F third. And the last thing I want is to have something published that is not high quality and that is not sound. I want to comment briefly on Judge Urbina's style of work in chambers and mine. They're somewhat distinct. As a judge, I'm very busy. I have a lot of other activities I am involved in besides my work as a judge. Sometimes my clerks might question whether my work as a judge is first or whether all the other teaching and other activities I do is first. But I think all of them are equally important, my role as a judge to decide cases and my role as a teacher of judges and lawyers, I think, is important as well. So my interns and law clerks work on those things as well. I start court at 10, I end at 5 if we're in trial, and every Friday we have something called the motions docket. And all my interns here will tell you that preparing for the motions docket is like studying for the bar exam every week without studying. It's kind of like taking the bar exam every Friday without studying. You are reviewing a wide collection of issues. Tax case, constitutional law problem, issue involving the sentencing guidelines, and I have maybe 4 days to get prepared for that. And you have maybe 3 or 4 days to prepare for that. And the lawyers have spent many months or weeks preparing their briefs for us, and I have to make a call. And I'm going to make a call. And I'd like to be informed when I do that. I don't require my law clerks to report at a particular time. Certainly not 7 o'clock in the morning, Judge Urbina, but I expect them to be there normal business hours at least by 8:39 to open the doors and answer the phone and do all the things that have to be done. And we're typically there until about 7 o'clock every day. We're not always in trial, and I would say that 80% of our time is in chambers working on opinions and working on orders and moving cases through the system, as opposed to in trial in the federal court. And I really don't care where they do the work. And we have laptop computers, and so have laptop, we'll travel. And that applies to the interns, too. You can't take files out of the courthouse, but you can certainly take the photocopies, and you can draft your memo and email it to me, and I'm going to read it, and we're going to meet, and we're going to go over it before court, and ultimately we're going to go through a couple of drafts with the opinion before it goes out. So that's just my approach to that. I am a firm believer in hiring interns and encouraging interns to compete for clerkships. I think some interns find that after the experience that they definitely want a clerk, and some decide, well, you know, this is really not for me, and that's fine, but I think you ought to take advantage of it. What I want to make sure that we do is to make sure we ask any questions that you have, because I know there's another session you're going to go to shortly to meet with the judges, law clerks who are here. And so let me open up the floor for questions. If you all have questions, please. Don't be afraid. Jump right in. Yes.
Any kind of experience. And let me modify that.
Would you repeat the question, Judge Abe?
Yes. The question is, I think the question was that in consideration of the fact that I don't hire law clerks for the law clerk position out of law school, do I consider any other type of experience other than a former clerkship as relevant experience? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, I did not mean to overstate that. Sometimes I will have an applicant, and I get about 700 to 800 applications for each opening. I'll have an applicant who took some time off between college and law school and became a computer specialist or taught or did something. I consider that relevant experience, even though it hasn't come after law school, because really what I'm looking for, as I mentioned earlier, is mature judgment. Something in life that has given that person a perspective that will come into play when I'm relying on that person's judgment. And that can happen in a number of ways. Most frequently it happens after law school, but it can happen in some other fashion as well. The other thing about the early entry for my law clerks, and I know I won't hear the end of this, is that in some chambers, and I gather in Judge Lee's chambers as well, things start popping kind of early. And I find that the law clerks, who at first bemoan the fact that they need to be there so early, actually appreciate the quiet time. You know, once they start to have their cup of coffee and so forth, and their eyes are open, and it's 7:30, and now they're actually focused and the phones are not ringing, it gives them that little bit of a head start on the day before things get crazy and hectic. The other thing I wanted to mention in reference to what's already been said, which kind of touches on your question but is more specific to Judge Blackburn Rigsby's observation about dealing with the person out in the front office. One of the things that I think, and I'd be glad to be contradicted if any judge here feels otherwise, is that when an applicant for an internship or a clerkship comes in, the judge wants to know where that person's ego is. If the person is going to take umbrage because you hand something back and say this is unacceptable and these are the reasons why, this paragraph makes no sense, this sentence does not flow into the following paragraph, if the person's going to get insulted and going to pout about something like that, they can't work with me. And I doubt that any judge here would want to work with someone who doesn't say thank you, that this is really an important observation and really an important critique for me to get, because I want to learn how to do it right, and this is good. So when you're doing your interview, when you come in to meet the judge for whatever it is, be aware that the judge is going to have, in all likelihood, that factor in mind.
Additional questions, please. Yes. Yes. The question was whether you would encourage a third-year student to apply for an internship who was also considering applying for a clerkship. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. What matters more is the type of internship they had, what they wrote. Can I see a writing sample, and what the judge says about them? Because I check all of the references because they're very closely, and I listen to what the people say and what they don't say. And so writing experience and prior trial experience as an intern is helpful from the appellate court perspective, because I think it helps you have a better perspective of the record that you're reading, so it's not just paper. And can I point out one point that I didn't make that I think is important to me is intellectual, what I call intellectual curiosity. Somebody who's excited about the law. I love what I do. I love being a judge. I love having all these different issues come at me. And I want somebody who's going to try to hang on to that excitement as you're sort of reading through the record and not feel so helpless because you just got out of law school, but feel empowered that you just got out of law school. You know a lot. You have a lot to learn. And you're going to look for the answer, because the answers don't come easily. If they came that easily, then we wouldn't need case law. We would just have, you know, rule books. So somebody who's going to be able to ask the questions, get excited about the issues, and apply the information.
Yes. Question is, what could a first or second year associate do to help them compete for a clerkship to leave the firm to go clerk? Well, I think that we assume that if you're with a large law firm or a medium-sized firm or a public interest law firm, that you're doing research and you're writing. And so we hope that you will further refine your research and writing ability. We also hope that you will have some opportunity to do some work that requires attention to detail. And as I understand it, first-year associates spend a lot of time doing document production and document review. It may sound boring, but the fact is, attention to detail is critical in the legal profession. A misplaced comma, a misplaced word, can transform the import of a business transaction. In fact, many of our lawsuits involve just that. Someone made a mistake. So we need people who can pay attention to detail, and so we assume that as a first- or second-year associate, you spend some time doing that. And perhaps sometime with a senior partner or a senior associate in the firm working on projects in a variety of areas that might be of some help to us. So it depends on the firm, it depends on the kind of experience you have, and also depends on the writing sample. Let me just address the writing sample very briefly. It's impressive if you make the law review a law journal, but suppose you don't. Well, we'd like to see a legal writing sample that is either a memorandum, a brief, something that demonstrates your ability to identify issues, to apply the case law, and to write really well. It was more than about 20 pages too long, and it needs to be something that you wrote. Law review articles, we know, are heavily edited, so we want to see something that you've written that's your product and something that you're proud of. My suggestion is before you send anything out to a judge or to compete for internship or clerkship is that you have someone else read it with a red pen to make sure that what you send out is your best work. There's a judge up in New York who approached me about helping her identify some candidates for clerkship, and she had this young woman selected. Her resume passed muster. She was on a journal. She spent a year at a law firm, and she had a really wonderful interview. After the interview, she sent the judge a thank you letter and expressed her gratitude for having been interviewed by the judge. The date on the letter was 2005. This is 2007. She did not get the clerkship. The judge said to me, I really liked her, but, I just don't know if she'll pay attention to detail. So just be mindful of that. Other questions? Yes. That's a really good question. What is the typical length of term for a judicial law clerk? I would say that typically in state courts and some federal courts is 12 months or 1 year. There are a number of judges in state and federal court who have two-year law clerks. I am going to have two-year law clerks starting this year, and I've had two-year law clerks in the past. And I'm sure that Judge Urbina, 2 years?
I've had two law clerks that have stayed for 2 years, but that's the exception rather than the rule. And generally, it's a one-year clerkship.
It's 1 year.
What happens at that second year, I call refinement. That is to say, you spend a whole year learning to work for that judge, understanding that judge's judicial voice, their style, their approach to problems. In that second year, what happens is I think a level of refinement takes place where you have some insight into how the judge wants things prepared. And so in that second year, you then further develop your intellectual ability, your capacity to go depth in more in depth, and to produce more better opinions, I think. And my experience with second-year law clerks has been that all of them have gone to firms or public interest settings have said that they were immediately entrusted with major responsibility. And there was very little that they saw in that first year they had not seen at the court. So they had an idea about how to approach that particular problem.
I know I'm jumping around, but I wanted to comment further on Judge Lee's point about the typo in the letter. And, you know, you think it's just a little typo. When lawyers say, or when judges say, when I say I need a draft of something, or when an associate, I started out in a large firm before going onto the bench, when a senior associate or a partner says, give me a draft, that doesn't mean, you know, you're stream of consciousness, you know, let me just write down some quick things for a quick draft. A draft is a misnomer. It means your best possible work that you've edited many, many times, that you've had someone else look at, that you've proofread, that you've let sit, that you've reread. That's what that means. It means your, so when we say draft, it may be misleading, and I don't want anyone to fall into that category. Your draft that you present to your supervisor, which would be the judge that you work for or the partner or the senior associate, must be your absolute best, typo-free. And in this day and age, there shouldn't be typos because we have word processing, we have spell check, which you can't rely on solely, but spell check helps to So beware if somebody says, oh, just shoot me a little draft and I'll take a look at it. Because when I get stuff like that, I think, oh, my goodness, you know, what's the matter with this law student that they've sent me something with all these typos that they could have caught with some more careful reading. And so attention to detail is so critical.
Touching on a point that was made by in two questions, let me mention this. In terms of preparing, what to do if you're in a firm, and what type of preparation work, advanced work would impress the judge. One of the things that I think judges really look to is a person who is well organized. If a law student, if a candidate comes in and says, I work full time and I go to school at night, I know this person is well organized, especially when I look at their grades and so forth. So if you have a job at a firm or elsewhere, take a lot of initiative at whatever that job may be. Get to know the partners, get to know the people who are in charge, take on an added responsibility, do the extra work. The initiative always impresses anyone who's later on may rely on you, memorialize that as an example of how well organized you are, because at some point that issue is going to come up.
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, for someone who might be coming out of law school a little later on in life, say early 30s, would you consider it advantageous to still take...
Who do you have in mind, by the way?
Would you consider it at that point still advantageous for someone to take a year or two out and do a federal clerkship before jumping into their career?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no age restriction on interns or law clerks. I have a person in my office now who has an MBA from Wharton, who is a student at another law school. She's a mom. She's, you know, I think, you know, mid-30s, and she's a superstar. Yeah. I think that there's some who even, I've had former military officers. April Weisskopf, who's in the front row here, is a former Marine. I've had former Marines and all kinds of people as interns. Absolutely. All those things make you separate you from everybody else in a good way. We want to give you a chance to meet with the law clerk, former law clerks who are here, and to do sessions with them. But let me take this last question here. Well, when will you get back?
That's not too late.
I don't think that's too late. You can send your application in before then, and I don't think by mid-July all the applications ought to be going out for fall. And then if you get calls for interviews, you can respond that, can I schedule it when I get returned? I wouldn't worry about that.
I agree.
Yeah. Where's Shelley? Tell us what's next, Shelley.
You didn't have a chance on the way in. There are sign-up sheets for small group discussions. We have seven fantastic alums who all had clerkships for various types of courts. Many of them have had several clerkships. They're going to share their insight with you in sort of a small group casual discussion. If you haven't signed up, bring them up. I think, are all of them, actually, yeah, sure. Do those of you who are in the room want to go ahead and come down? The alums?
Tell who they are and where they were.
Hmm? It's on the sheet.
Oh, nice. Good.
Come down.
Oh, good. I don't know.
That might help people know which ones to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're coming.
Okay. Come on.
Sue Barry Williams.
What court?
Tell us who you are and where you clerk. Come to the microphone, please.
The reason I asked him.
My name is Zuberry Williams, and I used to clerk for Judge Lee, obviously. And right now I'm at a law firm in Baltimore, Astrakhan Gunston Thomas. And before I clerked for Judge Lee, I got the opportunity to clerk for Chief Judge Robert Bell, Maryland Court of Appeals.
Yeah, she was president of the FN's
bar. Really? Okay.
Hello, I'm Portia Brown, and I clerked first at the Maryland Court of Appeals, then I clerked second for Judge Lee in Alexandria, and then I last clerked at the Fourth Circuit down in Richmond, and currently I'm at the
for
Judge Gregory. And I'm currently at the Department of Justice.
Jared Smith, 05, clerked for Chief Judge Washington in D.C. Court of Appeals, and now I'm with Judge Lee in the Eastern District of Virginia.
I'm Eric Huang, and I currently clerk for Chief Judge Robert Bell in the Maryland Court of Appeals.
Good evening. My name is Melinda Van Lowe. I interned with Judge Lee for, I think it was a semester as well as a summer. I then went on to clerk in the Fairfax County Circuit Court for the Honorable Dennis J. Smith, and now I work in a small law firm in Fairfax County called Greenspun Davis & Leary.
Good evening. My name is Ebony Robinson. I'm a recent graduate. I graduated in May of 06, and I currently am a law clerk for Judge Blackburn Rigsby.
So as you can tell, we have a lot of wisdom here in this group, so don't miss out on the opportunity to stay and talk with them. And then on behalf of everyone at WCL, we want to thank all of you, all the judges, for coming to our panel tonight. Events like this obviously couldn't happen without people like you who are willing to come and share your insight and advice with our students.
Thank you.